Welcome to this special edition of Sister Secrets Live with Aisha Adams Roberts, where we teach you the secrets to happy, healthy relationships, from dating to marriage and into marital bliss. Tonight, we're privileged to have as our special guest Sharon O'Day, who is known as the Money Mentor to Women. She's going to share tips on how to get your finances together so that you can have more romance. Let's join our conference call already in progress. I had a lot of emotional baggage, and I began to seek out mentors, people who could speak into my life and show me direction. I began to ask them, how do you know when you meet Mr. Right? What does it take in order to prepare for marriage? And I had a lot of different opinions and things spoken into my life. I had to sort through a lot of things, but eventually figured it out. And put all I learned into a book, Can I Help a Sister Out? How to Meet and Marry the Man of Your Dreams. And since then, I've been speaking into the lives of women as they are dating and also women who are married as they're seeking to develop healthy relationships, going from dating into marriage and into marital bliss. And one of the questions, recurring questions that I get on a regular basis from you on Facebook, on Twitter, through direct messages is you want to talk about money. I get questions like, well, what if I make more than the man? Can that relationship work? I get emails from women who say the reason why they are no longer with their husband is because he was intimidated and insecure about the fact that she made more money than him. I have women who think that they need to get out of debt first before they can even begin to date. And I have couples who are on the verge of divorce because they fight over money. And so I sought out the very best expert that I could find who I knew would have the right direction, the experience, and the knowledge to be able to speak into your life to talk about how money impacts your relationships and how money impacts you even if you're not in a relationship. So it is my privilege and my extreme honor to be able to have Miss Sharon O'Day with us tonight. And let me just give you a little bit of background about her if this is your first time hearing about her. Sharon O'Day is someone who's been on the road less traveled most of her life. She was raised in Brazil. She speaks four languages fluently, and she's lived and worked all over the world. She's done everything from hanging out of helicopters as an aerial photographer in the Amazon to living in Brussels, where she was in charge of marketing Godiva chocolates worldwide. At 30, although she didn't have an undergraduate degree, Sharon decided she needed an MBA. So she became the very first person accepted into the Wharton School, the best finance program in the United States, without an undergraduate degree. And by the way, the Wharton School is the school Donald Trump and all of his kids graduated from. From there, she worked for foreign governments and companies of all sizes as a consultant in her own company. Her expertise is in international marketing and finance. Then at 53, at what looked like the peak of her career, she lost everything, her house, her business, everything. Before starting her business back up again, she gave herself the time to understand how with all that financial knowledge, she could make such a mess of things. She's been researching and coaching ever since, focusing on women who get themselves into their 50s and find they haven't saved anything yet for retirement. But what she's learned applies to men and women alike and to all ages. She's currently finishing a book that talks about what she's discovered and provides a step-by-step way to get your head around money and get on the path to financial independence. So it is my privilege and honor to bring Sharon to the call. Sharon, are you there?
I certainly am, Aisha. Thank you so much. What a tremendous, tremendous introduction. That's great. I'm honored to be here to talk to your sisters.
It's such an honor for you to take time out of your busy schedule and your world travels.
Yes.
to join us. And like you said, to be with us sisters tonight. And there may be some gentlemen that snuck on the call, which usually happens every week. just so you know. So, Sharon, what can you talk to us about money? What? First of all, I have a lot of women who write me and say, I want to be financially independent. But when you try to, you know, get them to think about or to even describe what they mean by that, they don't really have the words for it. So could you help us out and help us think about what does it mean to be financially independent?
Yeah, you know, one of the biggest problems is that we don't have the right terminology. We hear a lot of words and we don't really know what they mean, but we hear them thrown around. And things like financial freedom and abundance and financial independence and all this kind of stuff. And people don't really stop and think about what that means. And part of that is that our educational system really doesn't teach us very much about money, and unfortunately our parents didn't either. And so I think that one of the biggest issues we have, and it has to do with anything we talk about money, is that two people can be having a conversation and they're talking about two totally different things. They think they're having the same conversation, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So after I lost everything with the mess that I managed to make of my business and my life, I decided that I really needed to understand money and what money really meant. Mm-hmm. And the more I looked at it, the more I realized that there are like three aspects of money. There's like an emotional one that is what makes it so emotionally charged whenever two people are having a conversation about money. Mm-hmm. And then there's what I call the physical side, which is knowing how many dollars and cents, literally, you know, how much is in the bank account, put it down in writing and so forth. And then the third one is what I call the spiritual one, but what I really mean is, what do you want to do with your life? What's really important to you? And that'll give you the discipline to do whatever it is you decide you need to do with your money. So if somebody can go through that process, and that's what I'm writing this book about, it makes all the rest of the conversation so much easier. And it makes answers to the different questions that I'm sure your readers and Facebook friends and everybody else are asking a whole lot easier, too.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to financial independence, the real meaning of it is that you have enough money put aside that when you wake up tomorrow morning, you don't have to go to work. Your money is making enough money to support you. That's what real financial independence means.
Wow.
So you can imagine that person who said, well, what do I do to have financial independence?
Mm-hmm.
For all I know, she could have been 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just a matter kind of using the wrong terms. If what she was talking about is being financially self-sufficient, what she means is that she's earning enough money for her lifestyle.
Hmm.
You see the difference?
Mm-hmm. Wow. And that's very helpful because, as you say, there's a lot of terms that we just kind of use without really understanding what they mean.
And, you know, with your PhD, you know that if you didn't have the right terms, you weren't communicating.
That's right.
You weren't communicating.
That's right. That's right. And that's a good segue into the question about communicating about money, especially when we're talking about relationships, you know, love relationships. And there's, you know, a lot of experts say out there that one of the biggest sources of fights and conflict in a relationship, in a marriage, is money, that couples are fighting over money, and it often leads them to divorce, actually. So why do you think people fight over money? Why is it so hard for people to talk about money?
Well, I think the reason they fight about it is that they don't know themselves how they feel about it. You know, if money was such a taboo, I know I'm quite a bit older than you are, and I'm a baby boomer, and you know, my mother never talked to me about money. Her mother never talked to her about money. Well, nor do mothers now. Very few of them are really training teaching their daughters. In fact, I had an article that came out today in an online magazine, and it was just such, I came up with such a great title, I had to write an article about it. It was called Mama, Don't Let Your Daughters Grow Up to Be Clueless.
Wow.
Because that really is what mothers are doing. You know, they're not, mm-hmm. because they're not so sure about money, they don't know how to talk to their kids about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you haven't found a way, and I can't blame anybody about this because it's just not out there. I mean, to me, my great mission is to educate as many people as I can so that they're comfortable with money, so they know what it means to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the end, it's not how much money you have. It's what money means to you and what it does for you. You know, how does it fit in with your life?
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a couple fighting over money, it's real possible that, first of all, they never had a conversation about it before they got together.
Mm-hmm.
Or as the relationship was getting more and more serious, they never really talked about it because either she was afraid she was going to slip and he was going to find out something about her that maybe wasn't as positive as she wanted, and she didn't want to lose him, or he had some kind of trouble in the past that he didn't want to talk about, and so if they just don't talk about money, everything's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But since money touches every single aspect of our life, you can't ignore it.
Wow.
You really have to have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost to the point where if you don't have the conversation, you're really setting your marriage up for failure.
Mm.
And on the other hand, if you do and find out that you're not compatible and you just can't come to terms, I think I'd kind of want to know that early.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my theory.
Right.
I mean, when you talked about all of your great relationships, I don't even want to talk about mine. Except that mine were in all different countries and different languages. It wouldn't even work.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's really good. We didn't really get a chance, though, to hear your story about kind of how you lost it all and recovered it.
You mentioned some of it in your introduction, but
mm-hmm.
I had started my own business when I was like 18 or 19. I mean, I've always worked. I worked at the loading dock of my father's iron ore mine when I was 13. I was in charge of the railroad cars. I mean, I've been working from the time I was a kid, and there were times when we had a lot of money. And then there were times when we had no money. I mean, I knew what the ups and downs felt like. And so I started businesses and did really, really well most of the time. And every once in a while I'd falter and something wouldn't work. But, you know, I'd pick myself back up again because that's what you do. You just, you know, sort of brush off your knees and keep going. And by the time I got into my early 50s, I had this really great consulting business. And I had wonderful clients, and I was doing all these big projects. And then when 9/11 hit and the whole U.S. economy stopped for a couple of weeks or maybe into a month and a half or two, a lot of my clients went bankrupt. And when that happened, I just went into a tailspin and lost everything.
Mm.
And I was in the perfect house in the perfect neighborhood in Coral Gables, Florida. I everything was perfect. My garden was perfect. My car was, everything was perfect until I realized that I didn't own any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, you know, I'd lived overseas and I came back to the States and I learned about the American dream.
Mm.
And the American dream is that everybody should have a house and everybody should have the car of their choice. It doesn't matter if you have the money for it or not. You're supposed to have it.
Right.
And when that little glitch happened after 9/11, that was enough to just turn everything upside down.
Wow.
And it's kind of like what's happened to so many people in the last two or three years with the whole economy reversal, where suddenly the income that they thought they could count on, they couldn't count on.
Mm-hmm.
We get so leveraged. We have so much debt without enough capital to cover it in the long term, that any mistake at all or any emergency or whatever
mm-hmm.
turns us upside down. And that's when we find out that we don't own anything. The
mm-hmm.
bank owns our house. The bank owns our car. The credit cards are all that stuff that we bought. Well, it's kind of ours, but not really.
Right.
And so that's what, when that happened, and this was really big time. I mean, I was really, really in the hole.
And I decided that it was finally time to figure out why. I mean, little ups and downs are okay. I was used to them. But this was huge. And I realized when I tried to get myself back out of that and look at my values and my standards and all that stuff, and then all my education. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the Wharton School, come on. How do you do that when you have an MBA from the Wharton School?
Right.
But you do it because you have emotional baggage. You do it because money isn't just numbers. Money has, you know, I'm going to go into this because I just think this is really interesting.
Okay,
when we're little, from the time we're born until we're about 6 years old, we function pretty much from our subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. Our conscious mind, the critical thinking, what's right and wrong, what's fair and unfair, all of that isn't really filtering what we're getting. And at the same time, if you think about it, we're trying to figure out how the world works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're two, we're three, we're learning to talk, we're trying to figure out how things happen, we're trying to figure out rewards and punishment, mm-hmm. we're trying to figure out if I do this, then that happens. And
mm-hmm.
and so we're like little sponges. And we're picking up everything that our mothers are saying, that our fathers are saying, eventually what our teachers are saying. We're just putting all of that in there without cataloging it. We're not, you know, we're not filtering it. It's just going into our brains. And then when we get to about 5 or 6 and we start having some judgment, then we can say, well, wait a minute, but that doesn't make sense. That's not right. That's in conflict with what he's saying. And so you start in your conscious brain. The problem is that when we get older, that stuff is still sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the stuff that we saw as kids. It's the stuff that we saw our parents doing. It's messages that we misunderstood because when we're little, we don't really understand everything that's going on around us. It's our mother in the supermarket line saying, you know, you want a candy bar, and your mother says, I can't give that to you. I can't even feed us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, suddenly this child is saying, oh, my mother's not going to feed me.
Mm.
Or I can't, my mother, you know, so you get into a scarcity mode. All these things are just imprinted on in our brains. Mm-hmm. And unless we get at them, either because something else comes up and belies something that we heard, those things just kind of sit there. And they cause behaviors. And they cause us to do things. They cause, you know, issues like you hear, you know, money is bad or money is evil. And so you carry that forward and it starts affecting how you relate to money.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends up, you know, it could end up with somebody who is a compulsive shopper.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, you know, workaholics. Workaholism comes from the same kind of emotional patterns. Gamblers.
Mm-hmm.
Tightwads, people who hoard. I mean, look at the hoarding programs that you see.
Right.
Those people have an illness. And all it is that they took something that was maybe a normal pattern of being frugal and careful, but emotionally it all got messed up in their minds.
Mm.
And so until I understood how all this worked, and understood how I made my mistakes, because, Aisha, it was like I had somebody talking inside my head.
Hmm.
I knew how to run companies. I was turning everybody else's companies around.
Right.
But when it came to mine, I didn't have the same set of rules.
Hmm.
And the same thing in relationships. I knew what was right and what was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I saw myself doing things saying, why did I do that?
Mm-hmm.
And it all comes from all those embedded messages. So part of coming out of that whole situation was to get at those things and really understand them. And since I've been a consultant all my life, I've turned companies around, I've taken U.S. companies into foreign countries and foreign companies into into the United States, and all of that requires research.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really good at researching. So I decided to turn this whole money thing into a lifetime research project and really get at the base of it. And that's really the start of how I started doing all the work on women and money.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I focused on women I mean, I was 53 when it happened, and I realized in talking and doing all my interviewing how many women got into their 50s. And all of a sudden, you know, you're after menopause. You have there are a lot of. It turns out there are actually some physical reasons why we go through this. Is this all there is? What about the rest of my life? What do I really want? And when that happens, you're kind of feeling your mortality. You're saying, okay, I realize that you know I'm like in my fifth decade. I'm not going to live forever, but I'm going to live probably till 80 or 85, and how am I going to pay for it? And so that was a group of women that I thought, you know, if anybody can really use this stuff, this is where I really need to focus, which is why that the book that I'm writing is called Money After Menopause, because because it's literally for, although the concepts are the same for everybody, you know, it really pertains to everybody. It's,
right.
You know, you have the same issues whether you're 25 or 45 or 65. It's just that you have less time left to fix it when you're in your 50s. So that's how I got into what I'm doing. And since then, I still do some consulting. I still travel. I work for some governments in Central America, and I'm off in Europe a lot. And all of that, actually, what was interesting is that once I started understanding how this worked, and got the emotion out of those issues. And there is a pretty easy way to get yourself out of to get those emotional messages out of your head. That can be done pretty easily. But what happened is that suddenly opportunities sort of opened themselves up to me. And I wasn't pushing money away. I was open to it because it didn't have all that emotional charge. And I started attracting different people to me. I had projects show up that were terrific. And because I had really scaled my lifestyle back after I lost everything, I decided to get kind of radical and cut way, way, way back. What it meant was that everything I made, I got, you know, I covered my expenses real easily, and then I started putting money away like crazy. And it's totally changed how I deal with money.
Wow.
Totally. There's a peace of mind, and I think this, you know, this is what some people call financial independence. I know that I will be okay financially at a modest lifestyle. I will be okay for the rest of my life. I'm never going to be a bag lady. I'm never going to be on the street. And the weight that comes off women's shoulders when they get to the point that they can say that, is huge. It feels so good, Aisha, to be able to say that.
Yes.
and that's where I want everybody to be headed. You don't have to be there at 24 or at 34, but you ought to be headed there. And that's where most people aren't, because nobody talks about money.
Right. But everybody needs it or wants
everybody
it.
Everybody needs it. Yeah. I mean, you take two people in a relationship, and if they haven't really thought through what they want out of life, you know, what does life mean to them? What is it that they want to achieve? What is it that, you know, they have one go round. So what are they going to do? What do they really want? If they don't know that themselves, then how do you join up with another person?
Right.
You know, how, without losing yourself. So there's so much of this stuff that may be related to getting money under control, but in the end, it really gets your whole life under control.
That's good. So what would you say, because you were alluding to the article that you wrote, Mamas Don't Let Your Daughters Grow Up to Be Clueless, is that what it was called?
Yep.
Yes.
I've been singing that Willie Nelson song all day.
Right, that's why I had to make sure I said Clueless and not Cowboys. I did post it on Facebook for, you know, our Facebook friends to take a look at it, because it really is a good article, you know, talking about how we as women in particular don't really get direct teaching about money. So what do you think women need to know about money? I asked my Facebook friends yesterday, you know, do you think men know more about money than women? And one woman who is a single mother said, oh, you know, maybe 30 years ago, but today there are more and more single mothers. You know, our life circumstances force us to know more about money.
Yeah, she's but, right. She's
yeah,
right.
But no one said what they knew about money. So yeah, what do we need to know about money?
Because because they're not being taught the basics. Mm-hmm. And what do people need to know about money? What you need to know about money is that you have to have less going out than you have coming in. That's
mm-hmm.
all you need to know about money. If you have that part straight, then you're fine. I'm serious. That's probably the biggest issue, and that's one of the things that I realized when I moved back to the States. I didn't move back to the States until I was like 40 years old. I lived overseas all that time. And when I came back and I discovered this American dream, and I realized that everybody bought everything on credit cards, I realized that there's a complete disconnect with our money.
Mm.
You know, when we were kids and you had to pull those dollar bills out of your pocket and the quarters and, you know, they're all scrunched up and count them out and they went into
mm-hmm.
somebody else's hand, you felt the money.
Yes.
But the problem now is that we don't even call it money. We transfer funds.
Mm.
No, we don't even use credit cards anymore. We push a button on our computer, and you don't feel the money. You don't feel it coming out of your accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in the end, I think that probably the simplest thing is that you have to have more coming in than you have going out. And I don't care what it takes to get there. And I'll tell you, one of the things I learned when I went through this whole process, and that was the concept of how time affects money. If you have some set expenses, you have say you have a mortgage to pay and you have some insurance payments and you know that you have your food money and you're really, really tight and you some expense comes up and you know that you don't have enough for the end of the month. So with every day that you check off on the calendar, it's like this huge rock behind you. And it's just rolling, and there's nothing you can do, and it's pushing you and pushing you and pushing you. And you get to the 22nd and the 23rd and the rent or the mortgage is due at the end of the month, and you feel there's like this pressure rolling over you. The chatter in your head, you're in this constant state of chatter. Where am I going to get money? What do I do? How am I going to do this? What am I not going to pay? Well, maybe I can borrow some. Well, what do I? And this goes on all the time.
Right.
The minute you get your inflow and your outflow even, you don't have to have a lot extra, but the minute you cut back your expenses just enough to match what you know is coming in, there's like this, and the chatter stops.
Wow.
Because time is no longer a factor.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you take on another job or do something else or get a raise or whatever it is, marry somebody with a lot of money, I don't, whatever it is, the minute you have more money coming in than you have going out, every day is a joy
mm-hmm.
because every day puts you in a better financial position.
Wow.
And you don't even have to be, it's not money grubbing, it's not focusing entirely on money, but you can't avoid the fact that it touches absolutely everything we do.
Yes.
It touches everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have a lot of people who, because I've done so much finance and stuff, I have a lot of people who ask me, you know, is it a good time to buy gold? Shall I buy coins? Or what should I buy? Or do I put money
mm-hmm.
in the stock market? And what's happening to treasuries? And should I buy foreign currencies? And my comment is, you know, before you're even ready to talk to a financial planner, before you're ready to start talking about investing, you have to get your head around money.
Mm.
And you have to get real, real clear on getting the gremlins out of your head that I talked about, getting real, real clear about exactly what's coming in and exactly what's going out and exactly what you owe. I know people hate it, but got to
mm-hmm.
do it. Got to get honest. And the third one, what do you want to do with your life? And not even your life. What are your goals for the next 5 years?
Mm.
And how are you going to pay for them?
Hmm.
And that's, I mean, all of these things, you know, we can all be in love. God knows it feels great.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have that conversation, if everything isn't on the table, then somebody's playing games.
That's right. Money can't buy love.
That's right. That's
what, and you know, when the money is gone, it seems like the love goes with it.
Funny
people,
thing, huh?
You know? Yeah.
Funny how that works.
So how do you, could you give us some tips on how to start dealing with those gremlins, as you call them?
Yeah. I have, I wish the book were out because I'd send you some chapters. how can I do this? What's the easiest way to do this? Because what it comes down to is the following. I'm going to see if I can clean something up that I can send to you, and maybe you can send out to people or something. But
okay.
They're like these classifications of different kinds of behaviors. And the way you get rid of gremlins is that you have to know what caused them. So you have to have something that kind of triggers the memory again. And we can remember pretty much what, you know, what triggered it. It's surprising how easily that comes out. Mm-hmm. And so what I typically do is I have people read through all the different kinds of behaviors and see what feels like maybe that pertains to them. We know what we're doing. We know when we're overspending. We know we're an overspender. You know, no one has to tell us. We know we're doing it. You know, we put ourselves on a forced budget, and then we go buy a pair of Jimmy Choo's.
Right.
I mean, funny thing, you just said, I am not buying anything for 3 weeks. And then you go on eBay, and you have to have whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
And there goes your willpower. So in the end, the way you get rid of these is just by becoming aware of them. That's really all it takes. I mean, you have like 2 or 3% of the population that has compulsive issues. Like, if you're a compulsive gambler, you know, you have to get yourself to Gamblers Anonymous. You know, what I'm talking about doesn't deal with that. If you're a real compulsive spender to the point that you're putting your whole family at risk and your livelihood at risk and about to go to jail, you have to go to Overspenders Anonymous or a psychologist or psychiatrist or something, because that's a totally different. It's a different caliber, and I'm not a psychologist, and I don't pretend to be one. But most of us are really dealing with garden variety behaviors. Mm-hmm. And so as I have people reading through these different behaviors, I'll give you an example. They're like three categories. One of them is avoiding money.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is worshiping money. And the third one is mixing money in relationships.
Mixing, you said?
Mixing money in a relationship,
okay.
Yeah. And I call it who use money to do what to whom.
Mm.
And whether that's psychological abuse using money, you know, whether it's whether you're using money to control or manipulate your children or using your kids to send off the debt collectors, or think about what that does to the kid.
Right.
In case of enablers, like not letting your kids grow up by paying for everything, or using money as gifts to hold them, or mother who grew up poor and wants her children to have everything so she never lets them work for it. Well, they never learn the value of money.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole issue of financial trust, where what they found is that the only difference between men and women is that we lie about smaller amounts of money. They lie about they lie about bigger toys.
Oh, I hope there's some wives on here and feel a little relieved because I lied in the shopping bag.
But, you know, for example, a woman gets married to a guy and she's bullied by him about money. And then she thinks about it and realizes that, gee, mom and dad did that too. That was the same pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So although it's really difficult, she knows it's familiar. Well, any behaviors like that, you know, we know what's normal or not normal, or what we can expect or not expect. So in doing this, you kind of go back and I give people options of, for example, if you're somebody who meditates, just meditate on it. Just think about it and let that be one of the things that you're focusing on, and see if you can't figure out what the behavior was what the incident was. And when you see that incident as an adult, it doesn't have any power. it was powerful when you were a little kid and you were dependent on your parents and you were confused and didn't understand what the situation was or what was going on. But when you look at that same incident as an adult, you kind of say, hey, big deal. And the minute you break that emotional link to that event, you find it really, really easy to change your behavior. Mm-hmm. And there's something really nurturing about seeing yourself change your behavior. You know, when somebody starts saving money, people think they can't save money until they can save big numbers. It's not true. The minute you start putting money aside, it feels so good. And the reason it feels so good is that you're starting to get control over your life.
Wow.
And the minute you start feeling that control, you want more.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll make more effort to save more. And it's not that the money's magnetic and is pulling more money. It's just how good you feel about what it is you're doing and the control that you're taking over yourself and over your own life.
Mm-hmm.
So the gremlins are really resolved by awareness.
Mm-hmm.
But if nobody ever talked about it, how were we ever going to be aware?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you just kind of bury it but still do the behaviors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And just try to fix the behaviors, would you say? We tend to focus on that.
Yep.
Good. That makes me think about then some of the other questions, that my readers and clients ask me when it comes to money. For instance, the whole issue of prenups. Should I get a prenup? I've had single men, who were burned after a divorce, and now they're left paying off, their ex-wife's debt. And they've said to me, with great conviction, like, I will never get married again unless I have a prenup. And then when I asked Facebook friends about that, they were like, oh, well, he must, it sounds more like a contract instead of a marriage. What can you talk to us about prenups? Because I think there's a lot of emotional connection to that instead of it just being kind of a financial transaction.
That's right. No, you're right. And again, why? Because money's so emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And so somehow we believe that if he wants to somehow limit what I'm going to get in the long term, he must not love me. That's nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's nothing to do with it. The other thing to think about is that a prenup can be written to say anything.
Hmm.
It's not as if it's this one-sided contract that the man writes and the woman has no right to anything. It can be written however you want it to be written. It can be written so that if a man has over the years earned a whole lot of money, you weren't part of earning that money, you came in later, and you come into his life, and you're married to him for a period of time, you're enjoying his money, well, why not, while the relationship is still on positive terms, look at something that's fair about, well, what happens if something goes wrong? What do we do? And if we talk about it now, it's not demeaning, it's not, but again, have to take the emotion out of the money, and you have to get to something that's really just fairness. You didn't earn that money.
Mm-hmm.
You have no right to the money that somebody else made a long time ago. It's nice to have access to it, and hopefully the relationship lasts forever and you enjoy it forever. But if you're able to have that unemotional conversation about what if, then if something happens, you're not dealing with unknowns. I mean, how many times I can tell you a time when I was in a relationship with somebody and I knew the relationship wasn't working. But I was trying to figure out how I could keep this thing together long enough so that I could get myself organized to do something else, or instead of dealing with our emotions just for their emotions, I was dealing with our emotions about, well, wait a minute, I don't have anywhere to live, so let me how am I going to do this? And, well, I'll just, I'm not going to raise my voice or have an opinion because I have to figure out how I'm going to get out of this relationship and how I'm going to live. If you've thought about that kind of stuff before, then you're dealing just with the emotions in the moment and not with all the money issues. They really need to be separate. I know it's hard. I know it's tough because we haven't been raised that way. A lot of the issues, by the way, around money come from deserving, whether you deserve money or not. And that's, I mean, that one is, that's such a tough one, because if you don't think you deserve money, then you're pushing it away.
Wow.
It probably came from, it probably came from comments that your parents might have made, your father might have made, your teacher might have made. I mean, it could come from anywhere. It could come from a pastor at a church.
Mm-hmm.
It could come from a family believing that sons had everything and daughters couldn't have anything, or daughters were. That comes from so many places. And if you're coming from a place of deserving or not deserving, then how do you have an adult conversation about money with somebody you want to have a relationship with?
Right.
You see, I mean, it's all like a big ball of wax, but the key is, how do you start unraveling this?
Yeah.
And making money just what it is. It's not, it doesn't have any emotion. It's a unit of measure. It measures your effort and my effort.
Right.
And when you work and you get that piece of paper, it gives you the right to go give it to somebody else. But that's all it is. It's not more than that. But we sure make it a lot more than that.
Wow. This is so good. Because, like you said, it's a big ball of wax, and we usually get, you know, entangled in it. And at the same time, entangled in other emotions that just come with trying to figure out how do you live with another person. You know, but then adding this into the mix can complicate it.
Yeah, which
you
is why honesty. Which is why honesty is so nice.
Yes. It's so rare.
Yeah.
But you said something about, you know, when it comes to talking about, you know, prenups or fairness and just thinking about the what ifs. You know, that, okay, that was his money, you know, and he worked hard to get it. I'm thinking about the women who ask me, well, what if, you know, I make more money than him, and he kind of has an issue with that. What might you tell women, you know, who are maybe concerned about their assets and protecting them, or even just concerned about how that might impact a relationship? How could you
in terms of protecting them, it's the same thing. It's just an agreement between you of who brought what and how we're going to handle things. I mean, if I look at and there's so many different combinations and permutations, Aisha. I mean, you know, she could be working and he's not. She could have a higher salary than he does. She could have inherited a bunch of money, and so they're on an uneven basis, and it makes it kind of hard. In the end, people are people.
Mm-hmm.
And the relationship should be the person to the person and not the person's money to the person's money.
Mm.
So if what the relationship is about is the people, then, and if you can talk about the money and do it somewhat unemotionally, because think about it. If a woman is more successful than the man at earning money, that doesn't mean she's more successful in life. It means she's more successful at making money. That's all that means. And so if she's making more money than he's making, and he has a big issue with it, or he has a self-esteem issue with it, what does that say about the relationship? It's not the money.
Wow.
Not the money.
Wow. So that he just has issues.
He has issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's
and it
not
wouldn't matter.
And if it weren't about the money, it would be about something else.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I know a lot of cases where women have a whole lot more money than their husbands or mates or whatever the relationship is, and it works really, really well because he's not intimidated by it. He's not diminished by it. He defines himself by who he is, not by what he has or what he's earned or whatever. That's not, you know, one of the problems is that, unfortunately, society measures us by what we achieve. Which, you know, is hogwash.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are a whole lot of, when you talk about deserving, I mean, you look at a guy who you look at somebody who's a gangster or who's a drug dealer and has a ton of money.
Hmm.
Does he deserve it more than somebody who's working a good job, putting in hard hours? No.
No.
So where does the word deserve come in? How do you link deserving with what somebody has?
Wow.
You know, it's really down to character. It's down to your values and your standards of integrity and things that, those are the things that I think make the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. So it's almost like we kind of put these, almost, you know, a morality to money. If I deserve it, I'm good.
That's right.
And so if I don't think I'm good, then I don't think I deserve money.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
This is really good.
But it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the problem is that it's so massive because
yes.
we've been trained this way. We've been,
mm-hmm.
you know, we've heard this all our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you, I mean, I'm going to be busy for a whole lot of years. I'm 63 years old. I have to pedal like crazy. I just have to keep talking and writing. It's a lot of work to do.
Yes. But I appreciate you helping us sisters out because.
Well, I love it. I really
yes.
love it. I really do.
Yes.
And I love seeing breakthroughs. You know,
mm-hmm.
I work with, I have clients that I work with, and I watch them blossom. You know,
mm-hmm.
I watch them just bloom. I have a client who is about my age, and she worked at home, or she was a stay-at-home mom, and then she worked for a little while, and then she and her husband bought a business together, and it turned out she was a better businesswoman than he was a businessman.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to deal with all of those issues of money, and they'd been married for, you know, 40 years.
Wow.
That was a tough one.
Wow.
It was a really tough one. And what she told me was, I want to learn all this, but I do not want it to affect my relationship.
Hmm.
I thought, whoa! That's a challenge. But
yes.
we've done it.
Wow.
We've managed to do it. And that was basically by getting both of them to understand that money had nothing to do with it. Relationship was totally separate from the money.
So do you suggest that couples kind of perhaps seek out a mentor that they can, you know, talk to together? In other words,
if they can find somebody enlightened, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because if only one of them talks to somebody and the other doesn't, then you've got one person who's enlightened and the other one isn't. And again, it's you know, you're out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's some really good people out there. You look at the people like Dave Ramsey and other people
mm-hmm.
that have been talking about money for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and they have a good part of what I'm talking about. I think I might go a little deeper on the emotional side than they do,
mm-hmm.
but because I'm not trying. See, the difference is that most people that you look at who are talking about money are trying to get you out of debt. Or fix something related to the money. I'm trying to fix something related to your brain and to your heart. I'm trying to get money where it belongs in your makeup. And as soon as you're solid with what you believe about it and what you believe about yourself, then the rest of the stuff takes care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a healthy attitude towards money. And there are people that are there are people who are raised in environments where they have a really healthy relationship with money.
Mm-hmm.
They do exist.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they're more than about, I don't know, 15-20% of the population.
Right.
It's that. And the rest of us are all wallowing in this mud. Trying to keep our feet clean.
Oh, wow. Well, talk to us a little bit more, and then I'll open the line and see if anyone has any, you know, questions they would like to ask you. But could you talk to us a little bit more about the services you provide for people as they're trying to get their head around money?
Yeah, well, I work with people one-on-one. And I have a blog at sharonoday.com, sharonoday.com, And one of the things that I try to do, I write an article once a week, and it comes out on Mondays, and so it's kind of like money on Mondays. On Monday morning, there's a if somebody signs up on the little opt-in, the little email box on the page, I just send them an email on Monday morning and tell them there's another article. I have a lot of people who are getting a lot of value out of just reading those, because each one takes on a different aspect, and I'll talk about a different type of money behavior, so that, you know, it's not always the same thing. It sort of mixes up stuff. The one today was a bonus, because it wasn't Monday, but I really loved that title, so I had to write it. And it also is something that I think is so important in terms of the relationship between mothers and daughters and money. But there's a good deal of information that's available there. And the other thing is that as soon as the legal people give me a release on the book is going to be published, and it'll give you all of this information. So if people would sign up on, I don't send a ton of stuff. I don't load your email box. I hate that. You'll get one email a week that says there's another article there. And that'll also let you know when the book is available.
Awesome. And do you give out like a free report or anything like that?
Yes, I do. There's one called 5 Myths Women Buy Into That Keep Them Broken Poor.
Wow.
It does talk about the 5 major stumbling blocks that women have.
Well, I do want to thank you, and I do highly recommend that everyone listening to this call that you go to SharonOday.com, SharonOday.com, and just fill out the little form there, and you'll immediately get the free report that Sharon just mentioned, and also get the alerts when her Money on Monday articles come out. And I know for certain I've already done that, because I want to get plugged into understanding more about my relationship to money. And I also want to know when your book is coming out, because even though I'm not in menopause yet, I want to figure all this out.
Well, I'm going to have to give out little brown covers, because I have a lot of men waiting for it, too. So we're going to have to put book covers on it so they can read it with nobody knowing.
Right. Put it in a little brown paper bag.
That's right.
Oh, again, Sharon, thank you so much. And have a few more minutes in the call. So if anyone listening, you do have a question, you can go ahead and press *2, and that will raise your hand, and I will bring you on live with Sharon, and you can ask her a question about money and relationships, or anything that Sharon will be able to help you with. So go ahead and press *2, and that will raise your hand. Let me go ahead and refresh. I know last week, I think someone hit *2 right when we were leaving the call, so I felt really bad about that. But like, oh, they raised their hand too late. And with all my years in the classroom, I understand sometimes when it comes to asking a question, you feel like it may be a stupid question, but there are no stupid questions. There's someone else who may be thinking the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. So I would give you all just a few more moments. And while I'm refreshing, Sharon, could you share one of your stories from overseas? You've done so many things, hanging out of airplanes and helicopters. And
yeah, I worked as an aerial photographer at a mine in the Amazon for 3 years. And
wow.
I got to spend 3 years photographing what they called the area of influence, which was all of the little towns and villages and the Indian tribes, and it was really fascinating. It was an absolutely fabulous job. And then I met a guy who was on the train going to Machu Picchu up in Peru, and he had on great cowboy boots. Now, let me tell you about relationships. I liked his tight jeans and his cowboy boots. So I sold everything I owned in Brazil, and I moved to Mexico onto an island and lived in a thatched roof hut in an island off the coast of Cancun while Cancun was being built. I mean, Cancun was just like pure sand, and look at it today.
Wow.
It's like Disney World on steroids. And so I've lived in old houses that that like built in the 1200s and 1300s. I had a I had a bed in Belgium that was older than the United States. I mean, I've lived in just about everything. My father told me as a child that if you couldn't get a good story out of something, don't do it. So I've kind of spent my whole life living my life in order to create great stories. And if you do that, you can't have a husband. It doesn't work. So you'll find yourself single most of the time but having a heck of a good time.
That is awesome. That's absolutely amazing.
If,
so I know that.
Aisha, if there's any, if anybody who's listening has any questions and they didn't want to raise their hand, and they want to ask me anyway, send me an email at SharonO'Day@gmail.com. Okay? I'll be happy to answer anything that they have in case they didn't want to ask on the group.
Okay. That's very generous of you. And thank you again, Sharon, for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
You're very welcome.
Enjoyed you so much and learned so much from you. So it was
I have a lot that I could learn about relationships. And it's never too late, Aisha.
That's right. For money or relationships.
That's right. That's right. Thank you. And
thank you
all
so
of your listeners.
Thank you. And we will see you all here next time, Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Have a great night, everyone. Thank you for joining us for Sister Secrets Live. For more tips, secrets, and training on how to have a healthy, happy relationship, please go to www.aeshaonline.com. That's www.aeshaonline.com.